within us well, because our time is very short, 2 to 5. I think everybody is prepared, especially that is after lunch. I don't remember clearly exactly, I should indicate to the department that due to my health, will just be in a position to open the meeting and after that hand over to the whip of the committee to so that we proceed with the process of the day. I don't want to take for granted that we know each other. We don't know each other. It has been a long time that we are not interacting. On that note, let me start by introducing myself. I'm Wendy Makati from the Northwest Province, the chair of the Black Committee.
My name is Moses Wemnore, GP.
Good afternoon, I'm Rico Ranto, EC.
Masa Laboroto, MP.
Hi, Dr. Valias, Iska.
Let me give this opportunity to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Fulek, I'm from the Department of Agriculture.
Good afternoon, Honorable. My name is Mbura Chogun, Agriculture.
Good afternoon, Honorable Members. My name is
My name is Gufi Tembalima from the Department of Agriculture.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Monica Newton from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Since he's introducing himself, he's in time.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm Sakiwo Kitso from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Afternoon, my name is Sema Hassan from Agriculture.
I'm from the Northwest, don't blame me. So, besides, Deputy Minister Senehas, Ghana, are they in opposition?
Apology from Mr. Plaki and Honorable Hasmin.
Thank you. On that note, Honorable Komoto, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make an apology that we will be leaving the meeting at 3 because of another pre-planned meeting. Okay, aye for now. Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to be sure you could say me. honorable members, let me just take to let's go straight to the business of the day. You are aware that other members will be needed for other information. And as we are aware, CJ, this is your strategic plan and annual performance plan. Our wish. And we hope that what you're going to present today, this is what you're going to report at the end of the year. Not something that you didn't present here as a department.
And my request will be when we make input on the response to your questions, because all of the officials were just indicating that from Department of Arts and Culture, but they didn't indicate the sector is going to give us, you know. But I think when they input, they will indicate. Yeah, it will really ask. On that note, let me just give it to, I don't know, because what's supposed to happen, the chief minister should leave, but because it's not here, yeah. Let me just take this opportunity to welcome Deputy Minister to our meeting. But I'm just going to request you that on the same note, you give us an input, although we know that the DG will do that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Apologies. Our friends in the Rowan place for the meeting. Apologies for not being here when it was started. Thank you very much for inviting us to come and make a briefing to the Select Committee. We know that the Select Committee from the MCOP, you have a direct relationship with our constituencies in the provinces, and therefore we always appreciated the opportunity to come and make a presentation here. And also just to make an apology for the minister who is out of the country, who would have also loved to be here to come and make to be part of the discussions here. What we'll do is I'll give over to the DG to go through the presentation, and during the course of the discussions, you know, I'll also make some comments as we go into the discussion. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not going to expose you, don't worry. You know our secret.
I do not. No, it will never happen again. Thank you. Thanks, thank you to the honourable members for an opportunity to brief the committee on the strategic plan and as well as the APP and the budget estimates of the Department of Arts and Culture, which is vote for in of the national budget. Perhaps let me say as I begin the presentation that together with me are the heads of the different units that DG is responsible for, the various units together with some of the program managers. We also have the parliamentary officers for both the minister, the deputy minister, as well as the DG, who help us to dialogue with parliament. I've got two colleagues who are on the way, Chair. They are flights of the delay joining us shortly, who also had two of the units in the department. Chair, the presentation, we're going to start with the objective and the contextual statements of how we locate the presentation and our strategic plan for this financial year. And then we're going to do an overview which covers the support posture, the mandate, as well as the situation analysis. And then we will deal with the strategic goals, objectives, as well as the programs. We will also explain how that links to other programs, but specifically our public entities, as well as the conditional grant for community libraries. And then we will finally deal with the budget estimates from this financial year going forward, how that covers, how the MCEF has been adjusted since the financial year, as well as the budget allocation program. In terms of the objective, the objective of the presentation is to brief the Senate Committee on our plans for this financial year, together with our budget estimate. And Chair, perhaps this resonates with what you were saying just now, that it really guides the monitoring of the department's performance against 2013. These are the things that we will be reporting throughout the year on to the committee. And obviously, we also want to, we would like this to inform and guide the preparation of the budget, of the department's budget vote, which is planned for the 16th. In terms of the context, we have prepared the APP within the context of the government-wide planning, monitoring and evaluation. We have located it within the 12 outcomes, and the bulk of our work is located within outcome 12, which is where the Minister's Delivery Agreement is located. However, we also contribute to a number of other outcomes, specifically the outcome on decent work. We contribute to the outcome on education as well as the outcome on dealing with the administration of the state. Now, that's how we have tried to contextualize our APP in line with the rest of government planning. Obviously, we have begun to align our strategic planning together with Vision 2030 as well. There are certain specific elements of Vision 2030 that deal with social cohesion and nation building. We have begun to align it with that, but also on particularly on job creation and economic development, we have aligned that with that. And the state of the nation, as well as the budget speech, they provide the line of march for the APP in line with the rest of government. The point that we think is important to make is that this is the final year of his term of administration. So the gist of the strategic plan is about completing the mandate that we were given in 2009, as well as laying the foundation for the next medium-term strategic framework. So whilst our work is focused on completing the things that we committed to doing, we are also beginning to plan for the next term of government. And we also make the point that next year is the 20th anniversary of our freedom and democracy, and hence is planning for the 20-year celebration. We will talk very briefly about this because it's a matter that is going to cabinet. But we are planning more than just the celebratory part. We are planning a 2-year program, the first year this year, being a year of mobilizing society and creating excitement and completing our 20 years of freedom. There may be many voices in the country and many perspectives about the first 20 years of our freedom, but the work that we are doing is to mobilize all of society to celebrate that, because it is important of its own. And that point does need to be made, and really is a need to mobilize as many people as we possibly can towards this. The second phase of that, which is going to begin on the 27th of April next year, is a phase where we celebrate, in fact, our freedom, but also in celebrating our freedom, mobilize society towards the implementation of our shared vision and our shared future in terms of the vision to be said. So that's the work that we are doing, but more of that will come as and when the matter is approved by Cabinet. We are also working with the DPME on the 20-year review of government performance, so we are looking at what this sector has produced over the last 20 years, and internally we are also looking at the end of term review, the 5-year review, which is going to be submitted through the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the President. Now, the overview of the department, our vision is that we are thriving arts, culture and heritage sector, which contributes to sustainable economic development, leveraging partnerships for a socially cohesive nation. Say, our strategic plan, our vision statement rather, covers both the sort of the main aims that we try to achieve. One is more social cohesion in the country, and secondly, economic development. We do that through the medium of arts, of culture, as well as of heritage, and it's important that we leverage on partnerships. There's very little that we can do on our own, but we try to reach out to a variety of partners in order to achieve our goals, particularly the sector itself. Our mission is to enhance job creation by preserving, protecting, and developing our cultural heritage to sustain our democracy and nation building. And our values are accountability, integrity in the way that we do our business, results-driven, ensuring that the things that we say we will do, we measure that by results rather than just by actions, professionalism, humility, and vulnerability, putting our clients and people in general first. The strategic goals are job creation, human capital development, access to information, linguistic diversity, the development, preservation, protection, and promotion of the arts, culture, and heritage, as well as governance and accountability. We feature that in terms of our plan. Governance and accountability becomes an extremely critical thing because a lot of the money that we have, and in fact a lot of the objectives that we have, are done through a range of other institutions that are associated to the department. So the ability for those institutions to be well managed and our ability to be able to account for them is an extremely important element of our department. Our mandate derives from a range of series of legislation, starting with the Constitution, Section 16 and Section 30, which are sections that guarantee access to information, as well as the right for communities to participate in the culture of their choice, languages, and so forth. Then there are a number of acts, quite a lot of them. Some of them are specific to some of our entities, the NABF, the National Heritage Council, the South African Heritage Resources Act, the National Library of South Africa, PANSALP, the Geographic Names Council, the Geographic Names Act, which created the Geographic Names Council, as well, the South African Library for the Blind. And then there are more generic acts, like the Cultural Institutions Act, the Cultural Promotions Act, the Heraldry Act, the Legal Deposit Act, which impacts on our archives, the actual National Archives and Record Services, the South Africa Act, the National Arts Council Act, which created the National Arts Council, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, apart from just as a state institution being bound by the National Access to, by the Promotion of Access to Information Act, because we manage the archives on behalf of the whole government, that act has a particular application to us. And the National Council for Information and for Library Information Act. And our mandate derives from some of the policy frameworks as well as legislation which is currently under review. We are reviewing the white paper on arts and culture. We have a draft which we're discussing now with our entities, and that is going to be going to Parliament prior to us presenting it it's going to go to Cabinet prior to us presenting to Parliament. The Cultural Laws Amendment Bill, we've got a bill which deals with some of the technical difficulties in terms of the Cultural Laws Act. There's the Community Library and Information Bill, which really addresses the functionality of community libraries, and the South African Language Practitioners Bill, which creates a profession on languages. Those are acts that we're going to be bringing to Parliament during the course of this financial year. By way of situation analysis, these are the things that, this is where basically we are, and that's the foundation that we are building on. In terms of promoting arts, culture, and heritage, we have developed, approved, and continue to implement the Zanzibar Golden Economy. We continue to develop new audiences in the market, which is important for the art, because if there are no markets, if nobody is listening to artists, if nobody is visiting galleries, the sector is not going to grow. We continue to contribute to job creation and economic growth. We continue to facilitate access to international networking platforms and markets for local artists. That's through primarily the kind of cultural agreements that we enter into with other countries, as well as joint programs that we implement with other countries, which give exposure to South African artists and practitioners. We continue to empower targeted and vulnerable groups such as women, youth, and people with disabilities. In preserving and promoting South African heritage, we have prepared a strategy for the celebration and commemoration of national days to ensure that such events are inclusive and contribute to national reconciliation, nation building, and social cohesion. Chair, last year, Cabinet gave us a responsibility for all national days. Previously, we were responsible for Freedom Day, for the Day of Reconciliation, as well as Heritage Day. But Cabinet decided that we should facilitate and coordinate all national days. And therefore, we have developed a program through which we find ways of attracting as many people, as many South Africans, to the national day that we do, or the nation, the programs of celebration national day as we possibly can. We continue to implement the National Liberation Heritage Wood Program, and we work in transforming the national symbols to reflect the values of democracy, and particularly teaching people about national symbols. We all know the experiences about the singing of the national anthem, and how parts of society still don't know the anthem. But we also promote all of the national symbols, including the less known ones. We know the Springboks because we've got a national team called, named after them. We know the Protea, but very few people know the national tree and the national fish and all of that. So we continue to build capacity in that regard. We continue to provide funding for declared cultural institutions, which is why government becomes such a big deal with us. Promoting access to information, we ensure that the National Archives and Record Services continue to support and guide records and information management procedures across government. Apart from just providing standards and procedures, we are a lodgement center at the National Deposit for all government information, which means that beyond a particular time, any official government document has got to be deposited with the National Archives for safekeeping, which is important, Chair, because as people research, whether they're academics or for whatever reason that they do research, they normally come to the National Archives to request information. We ensure that the National Automated Archival Information Retrieval System is upgraded and is working. This is the computer system through which people can search for documents in the National Archives and be able to access them, which is important because if people don't know how to which document is held with the archives, it makes it difficult to seek access to those documents. And we also continue to revitalize and build the country's community library. In fact, we have just come from a meeting with the Select Committee of Appropriations on libraries, and looking at the performance over last year of the community library's grant and the work that we have been doing with provinces as well as municipalities. Promoting the linguistic diversity, we promote the development of official languages and tolerance for South Africa's linguistic diversity. You recall, Chair, that last time we addressed the committee, the Select Committee, it was during the debate on the use of official languages bill, and how that really expands linguistic diversity and how people can access government information in the languages that they can understand. And we are currently in the process of finalizing the Language Practitioners Council Bill, which is going to create and accredit people who are qualified to be language practitioners, so that if a document is, there is a bit of quality control in the interpretation, the editing, and translation of various official documentation. And in promoting good governance and accountability...
Let me just interrupt you a bit. You've got two presentations to make. I'm going to request you that you try to speed up so that they can be asked after you are done so that members can have opportunity to engage.
Thanks, yeah. Let me speak that. In governance, we intensify our oversight and evaluation of our institutions as well as aligned planning processes through an integrated planning framework, which is the next presentation. And we have circulated our sector-wide strategic planning framework. And in developing human capacity, we improve efforts directed at developing the whole life cycle of individual artists, cultural workers, including existing artists and developing new ones. And we contribute to skills development through various programs, including provision of bursaries, particularly in sectors that have scarce skills. We will this year unveil the details of the establishment of the National Arts and Culture Industry Skills Development Academy of South Africa, NAGISA. And we have embarked on a process of aligning our structure to the new strategy and the availability of our budget. You recall, Chair, that we did report to the committee last year that we are restructuring the department in order to reduce our vacancies, because it was clear that we never have sufficient budget to fill all our vacancies. So we have done that. We're now aligning our strategic plan, our budget, as well as our organizational structure. And you will notice the changes that we have introduced there. And in such a position, we continue to drive demand-driven investment in cultural infrastructure and ensure that the state creative spaces remain accessible, functional, and lively for artists and communities. And regarding partnerships and funding, we drive an agenda of cultural diplomacy and international relations and expand South Africa's network with the world through strategic relations. Members would have seen in the media that on Monday, the Minister and the Deputy Minister launched the South African season in France, which is in response to the French season which took place in South Africa. It's through platforms like those that we continue to build cultural diplomacy as the fourth pillar of our diplomacy. And we emphasize South-South relations and the African agenda in arts, culture, heritage arena. Now, getting on our strategic goals, what are our strategic goals? We want to create 150,000 decent jobs in arts, culture, and heritage by 2016. Why 2016? Because this is based on the Mzansi's Golden Economy, which we adopted in 2011. I know that we have several questions which will be responded to tomorrow about Mzansi's Golden Economy, and we have prepared responses on how that is rolling out. On human capital development, we have targeted programs that are geared towards developing human capital in the arts, culture, and heritage sector. On access to information, we provide and enhance access to information by citizens and public institutions, information which is accurate, reliable, and timely in the language of their choice through the provision of libraries, archives, as well as the language service. The language service, Chair, provides translation, official translation for all departments, which is an extremely important service for communities. We also enhance capacity of the sector through equitable and sustainable development, protection, and preservation of arts. And we do that mainly through policy development, legislative promulgation, as well as implementation. And on governance and accountability, we align our public sector, art, culture, and heritage institutions around a shared vision, a common mandate, and strong governance accountability. And our strategic goals are to provide for a capable and skilled public-oriented workforce that is internally dealing with our administration. We develop systems, processes, and controls to ensure operational efficiency and effectiveness, particularly our management of our finances. We maintain an effective and efficient ministry which is the office that provides leadership in the department. We provide art, culture, and heritage infrastructure. We coordinate and lead in the implementation of social cohesion framework. Social cohesion is a business of the whole government. What we do is to provide a facilitation and leadership in that regard, but we cannot claim that we do all of it. It's what we are joined with the rest of government. We promote the public profile of the department and its program. We strengthen partnerships with our institutions and provinces. We implement programs to ensure socio-economic development for targeted groups. We increase participation and access to arts culture programs by targeted groups. We promote linguistic diversity and equity, and we provide for specialized terminologies in all languages. One of the big hindrance towards a fully multilingual society is the fact that a lot of particularly African languages are not developed. There hasn't been sufficient investment. If you talk mathematics, if you talk science, there's a lot of terminology that has not been developed. So a lot of what the national language service does is the creation of new terminology. The strategic objective is to build capacity in language practice, enhance access to information through translation and editing, enhance access to information through the development of human language technology tools. Chair, I must apologize for using acronyms. Human language technology, HLT. Support the implementation of projects aimed at job creation. Develop integrated 5-year sector-specific strategies, as well as policy interventions. Review the cultural industry growth strategy. Support programs in cultural industries. Improve infrastructure and distribution channels in creative industries and products. Develop the academy, I've spoken about that. Develop a research agenda and knowledge management system, which is what the sector strives in. And build strategic relations aim the exposure of South African arts, culture, and heritage to the international community. We also build, harmonized international and domestic policies that seek to protect arts, culture, and heritage. We also transform South Africa's heritage and heritage landscape through targeted programs. We establish strategic partnerships to leverage resources. We build capacity and enhance skills. We promote national identity and nation building and social cohesion through heraldry and heritage. We create jobs in heraldry and heritage, and we regulate and management record across the public service, and we provide adequate infrastructure for archives as well as libraries. Now, linking our goals and objectives to our program, starts with Program 1. Program 1 is administration. That is where our corporate services are located currently. And the first strategic goal there is to enhance governance and accountability, and the objectives related to that is the creation of a skilled, capable, and public-oriented workforce, the development of systems and controls for operational efficiency and effectiveness, which is where our finance is located, the maintenance of an effective ministry, provision of arts, culture, and heritage infrastructure, as well as the coordination of the social cohesion framework. Program 1 also enhances access to information because it promotes the public profile of the department and its programs, which is where our marketing comes in, but also we strengthen partnerships with the department institutions and provinces. Program 2 is performing arts, and at job creation we implement programs that promote socioeconomic development specifically for targeted groups, and we enhance the development protection and preservation of arts, culture, and heritage, and we do that through increasing participation and access to arts culture programs by targeted groups. Program 3 is the National Language Service, which entrenches linguistic diversity through promoting linguistic diversity and equity through terminologies. I've spoken about this. human capital development, we have programs that build capacity in human language practice. We run a bursary program that supports students that want to pursue careers in languages. We've got enhanced access to information. We enhance access to information through translating and editing, as well as through the development of human language technology tools. Program 4, which is cultural development, job creation, we support programs that create jobs. We also develop, protect, and promote our cultural heritage through a development of a coherent sector strategy and implementation plans, the review of the cultural industry's growth strategy, support programs in cultural industries, improve infrastructure and distribution channels, particularly the infrastructure of our performing arts institutions, the playhouses. We also develop and implement a dedicated academy, and we develop a coherent research agenda and knowledge management system for the sector. Program 4 is also responsible for the building of strategic relations and exposing South African art, culture, and heritage to the international community, as well as harmonization of our international and domestic policies to promote the arts. Program 5 deals with heritage, and that is, it provides policy leadership for efficient and effective management of South Africa's heritage and heraldry. We aim to transform South Africa's heritage and the heraldry programs through a targeted program. We established a strategic partnership to leverage resources for maximum impact. We build capacity for skills in heritage as well. We promote national identity as well as social cohesion. And it's also job creation through heritage and heraldry. The National Archives, they regulate the management of records across the public service and provide adequate and modern infrastructure for archives and libraries, both the national government, the national libraries, as well as for provinces and municipalities through libraries. Now, some of our high-level indicators here. In total, we have 157 indicators, which is quite a lot, but we will touch just on some of the key indicators. These are based on the select indicators which are on the estimates of national expenditure. If you look at the national budget, we've got a range of indicators that are there. We have translated those and we have broken them down essentially into 157 indicators, and that is the basis for our reporting. We report against these targets. And what are our indicators? Within Program 1, we want to, in fact, the first indicator is the number of arts practitioners placed in schools. This year we want to place 150. Last year, I think the number that we placed in schools was 44. These are arts practitioners that actually will teach school children the arts. That covers a number of government programs, job creation, education, and so forth. I'm not going to go to all of these, Chair, for the sake of time. But the number of public arts programs which are supported will do 9 this year. The number of jobs that we wish to create through public art and touring ventures, 15. The number of organizations trained in cultural events management, 5. The number of language practice bursaries awarded, we're aiming to have 208 this year. Number of poles and flags installed in schools, this year we're aiming for 2,500. And the number of handheld flags to be distributed this year, 100,000. The number of heritage projects to be supported, these are heritage projects that we are actually building from scratch. The number of bursaries in heritage to be awarded, 106. Number of jobs created in the heritage sector, 7,500. That is both in the creation of new monuments and similar, but also in the operation of these. Number of community libraries to be upgraded this year, we are targeting 40. like to think the what we managed to do last year, 36 college, right? And the number of libraries that we upgraded.
Yeah.
So this year we are targeting 40. The new community libraries are going to be built 16. This year we were able to build 14 and complete them. A number of cultural events to be supported. We support 39 events across the country. Number of touring venture projects, 5. The number of jobs that will be created through the support to arts and culture at 9,800. Now, if I may look at programs, what are the indicators, the key indicators of a program? On skilled and capable public-oriented workforce, we want to maintain a vacancy rate of no more than 10%. And we want to achieve 50% of SMEs to be females, SMEs and senior managers. And you can see that we've got quite a way to go, Jack. We still have a way to go. But we want to achieve that this year. 2% of people with disabilities. We want an unqualified audit opinion, which is what we have maintained for a number of years. And we want all our service providers to be paid within 30 days. We are having discussions with our auditors about this. There are three service providers that we disagree on. That they say we didn't pay them within 30 days, so we are busy sorting this out. But we want all our service providers to be paid within 30 days as per government regulation. We want this year to hold 20 individuals with communities, which is with our political principles, an opportunity to engage with communities, explain what we do, and also get reflections from the community on the services that they receive from us. And we had one emiso just over the last weekend in Naturena. Honorable was part of that emiso. On social cohesion, we want to print 15,000 manual and tool kits. These are important share because they will help provinces and municipalities as they have their own emisos and community consultations on how this is supposed to work and the kinds of things that they should be doing. And we also want to continue with 30 community dialogues. Program 2, the number of bursaries that are going to be awarded to young people in arts, culture and heritage and high school, 20. The number of trendsetters which will be placed in various provinces, 66. Linguistic diversity, I had mentioned that we want to pass the South African Language Practitioners Council Act this year, as well as 280,000. In supporting job creation, this is program 4, the number of jobs created, want to create 18,000 short-term jobs. We want to establish the National Arts Bank as a legal entity this year. We want to launch the sourcing enterprise. Want to establish the KISA and we launch the strategy for the KISA as well as appoint its board members. We are going to establish the cultural observatory and there are two mapping studies that will be completed this financial year. A number of continental events that will be held. We'll do 4 continental events with our African partners. We are going to approve the charter of for African cultural license. Our framework for overseas development assistance is also going to be approved. And our IR policy, the international relations policy, is also going to be approved. The transformation of the South African landscape, the number of legacy projects that will be developed will be 2. The number of bursaries awarded will be 106. The number of flags installed in schools, 2,500, I've spoken about that. The number of library materials to be purchased by provinces, 350,000. Number of new libraries, 16. And number of libraries that will be upgraded, 40. And how does this link to other plans? It's linked, obviously, with the community libraries grant, which is aimed at addressing the backlog in terms of library provision particularly in rural areas. And we could talk in a bit more detail about how we are distributing that grant. And it links also with our public institutions. See, I'm not going to go through all of this because we've got 28 public entities as well as 4 associated institutions, which makes it 32. But these are the institutions. We've got 6 performing arts institutions, the theaters. There's the National Film and Video Foundation, which supports the film industry. The National Arts Council, which provides grants for the arts community. Then we've got heritage institutions, the Dal Museum, Freedom Park, Zigo, the Literary Museum, and so on and so forth. But these are the institutions together with their budgets. A question that when we present this, we normally encounter is, why is such a big difference between the budgets of the various institutions? If you look at an entity like Luton Museum with a budget of 7 million rand, and you look at Freedom Park with a budget of 6 million rand, the major difference, Chair, is that some of these entities are really small house museums, like Luton Museum. But when you look at Freedom Park, it's a large diversified museum which covers a range of things. But also, if you look at Robben Island, a very different kind of a museum, which also provides its own services as to generate its own electricity, provide its own water. So our museums are very diverse, hence the differences in budget. And then we've got our libraries, the National Library, as well as the National, the South African Library for the Blind, which support specifically communities with visual impairments. And then we've got HANSAUP, which is an institution that we support, which promotes multilingualism in terms of the constitution. Okay, if I may come to our budget for the next MDF. Over the last year, Treasury asked all departments to identify savings, and we were given a guideline of saving 1% of our budget this year, the 2% 2% next year, and 3% in the outer year. And we have been able to do that. I will get into how we have tried to do that. This is the budget of the department. A program for this financial year. In 2012-13, the financial year that we just finished, our budget was 2.67 million rand, billion rand, sorry. This financial year, it increases to 2.9 million rand. And of that, program one administration has 234 million rand. Program two has 719 million rand. Program 3, which is the language service, 123 million. Culture development is 221 million. Heritage promotion, 834 million. And archives and library service, 781 million. And the budget, you'll notice, Chair, that over the last 2 years of the NCEF, it grows quite substantially. There are some substantial jumps. And you notice that all of those are substantial jumps are in Program 6. Which is the National Library, the National Archives and Library Services. That is because National Treasury has decided to recapitalize that program and added 1.1 billion rands over the NTA on that library. Reason is to really expand libraries and build more new libraries in the various provinces. Economic classification, our compensation this financial year is 196 million rands. Goods and services, 469 million rand. The conditional grant for library is 597. And you see in the outer years, between this year and next year, the conditional grant almost doubles and goes by 30% in the outer year. Amount of money that we spend with our public entities, 1.026 billion rand. Our public works money, our capital expenditure, 509 million rand, which is the money that builds infrastructure both for our own purposes as well as for the purposes of our institutions. Non-profit institutions, 13 million rand, and household, which is project funding, 94 million rand. Our capital assets, 6 million rand. Our budget, 23 million rand of our budget is spent by the department. So 27% of it is spent outside, spent to our entities and our institutions. That is why governance is so important for us. Because if we don't have strong monitoring and strong governance, we can't account for 77% of our budget. On how these funds are going to be spent,
you are left with 4 million for the so that you can get also the second presentation. So could you please be quicker than, I know you've got passion on what you are doing.
Thanks, I'll be done in 4 minutes. Of our budget, 35% goes to agencies, 21% is a grant, our goods and services is 16%, capital work 80%, and the rest is really 7% of our budget. And what is spent within DAC, 29% is compensation and 70% is goods and services. Outside DAC, most of the money goes to our entities. There's the capital works, there's a bit of conditional grant and the library grant. And how have we adjusted, Chair? Just to mention this then, you'll notice that what we've done, when Treasury asked us to cut our budget according to that 1%, 2% and 3% over the NTF, we absorbed most of the cut ourselves as a department. We did not cut our entities, with the exception of three entities. We've tried to do that because obviously it has a huge impact on the entities, so we've tried to absorb as much of the cut ourselves. And you'll see that over the MTF, there is substantial growth, particularly in year 2 and year 3, which is where the library grant is going to go to. And when we look at how we have structured our savings, the only entities that are affected by the savings is going to be the National Arts Council, KZN Playhouse, as well as the National Heritage Council, or and Robben Island. The rest have come from the department. And this is earmarked funding that we can't touch for anything except for library grants, the library service, PANSAS, Capital Works, the LFVF, as well as salaries for heritage professionals, and besides the Golden Economy Project. That is our budget. I'm not going to go through the budget per booklet. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dixon. Honorable members, we will go to the next presentation before we ask questions. Can we agree on that? Thank you. I will give over the department to the department again to give us the second presentation. And the second presentation, I think because we have to be out of this committee room at 5, I think I will only give it 45 minutes.
Sure, in fact, with the DM's agreement, I would have suggested that we take questions for the simple reason that the second presentation is really a process of how we want to do our strategic planning. It does not deal with the content of what we do. So I don't want to take a bit of time on it if you're going to compromise the discussion.
It's fine. It means the answers are within the second presentation. Is that what you mean?
No, I was going to say, if we can take the questions and responses first, then we'll wrap up with the last presentation.
Honorable members, that's the suggestion from the DG. Can we... Can... Can...
did he
okay,
is the implication saying after the last presentation when we're going to come back and ask clarity from that presentation? I don't think that's what he means. We will ask questions on the second presentation. I will give over to members to ask questions from the first presentation, and I think honorable
who's this?
De Villiers. I'm sure you will come back before we finish. Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair. My first question will be the 20 visas. Do you have a forecast to say where are you going to place those visas? Or maybe, for instance, saying you aim to hold 2 times 9 provinces or 3, or it depends according to who wants you to come to the province and how it is built, which will also link up with the city community dialogues. How do we, what's the criteria or how many provinces, so that you then can know that this is an avenue for Izimbizo, and then this is another avenue for community dialogue, and to be able to communicate with our constituencies and facilitate that. The other one is on the community library, to say, well, what is the criteria also to target a place to build a community library? You may be saying no, there's no need in Gauteng, there's a lot where there is a need in some other areas where the special planning was has impacted, and also the new areas that I imagine RDP places. Honorable members, could you please give her a space to talk? Your voices are too loud. I'm telling her. She's being disturbed by you. The new places that are emerging, and also the redressing of the special development. So what criteria do you use in order to do what you intend to do, so that we can also advise you from the request from our constituencies, as you know, what did they say on Saturday? On the flags. On the flags, you, I'm not sure that I read it correctly, whether you have placed 2,500 flags in school. If so, I'm not sure how many schools do we have in South Africa. Say, at what percentage are you going to be at the end of the financial year? Would you have placed 10% of the flags, or will be at 80 something or whatever it is? Also, it's not in your presentation. When we are arguing in this forum, we're saying schools and other public buildings as an identification that this is a government department building. So in your plan, it's only schools, maybe the other one is written in white. We can be advised in terms of whether is there any priority to do, or even not priority,
is there any mechanism of mobilizing government departments, or they can't be able to do it from their own budgets and to do it. Yeah. And then the other one is on the this document. This one. I just went through and browsed it and came across section 8.4. Maybe before section 8.4, it talks about the key stakeholders. And what I would ask, which is a serious concern, DG, SGM, which is a serious concern, is that in this document, which is a public document now, said closely, you are only defining portfolio as a key stakeholder, and Parliament has two houses, portfolio and select committee, and you are not featuring anywhere. Does that mean that you are not adding value to your department? That's why you don't regard us as your key stakeholder. We saw, I think 2010 or 2011, there was a very big individual at a high level, and the president was there, where he called all the sectors or practitioners, whatever industry, from the arts and culture. What one wants to know, because at that time we were saying that the sector is uncoordinated and unorganized. What one wants to find out is the question of where is the sector now? Are we having input in terms of be able to say we have this artist here, with craft here, whatever. So that maybe we can see that, okay, they did a lot to be done. And when in our constituencies people are coming up with to say, organize yourself and all those things, how far are you moving in terms of mobilizing the industry to be able to mobilize themselves and coordinate themselves? Thank you.
Honorable Father, the two honorable members who have just entered, you took a break of 2 minutes, so I have already went through with the program of calling the members. So if you have questions, you still have time to ask your questions, but after the other members. The two of you, De Villiers and Father, Honorable Father.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just like, I only got one question, and one is about creating 150,000 jobs in this time span. Now, 150,000 jobs, I don't want to say it's a thumb-sucking figure, but when we are talking about creating jobs like interpreters, etc., you know, it's a lot of jobs that we want to create. And then we are also talking about job creation again, if we look at your objectives in implementing programs, so most socio-economic development for targeted groups. Now, I would like to know, what is your success rate percentage-wise on the job creation program that you are running? And is it economically viable at the end of the day? Do you actually get value for money? You understand what I'm trying to say, DG? Because it's nice saying we're putting money into these programs, but are we actually getting it out that we can get people to create a life for themselves after this?
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. President, my apology to be late, Mr. President. I was coming from other meeting. My first question, Mr. President, job creation remain one of the key priority for this government. when the department replaced the Investing in Culture project with the Francis Golden Economy project, one of the key aims was to boost job creation. And the question is, how many jobs has the Mzansi Golden Economy created so far? And how many jobs are you planning to create this financial year? To Honorable Chair, heritage institutions throughout the country, especially museums, complain about one thing, and that is adequate funding or lack of funding. This is one of the key challenges from us and culture sector. And the question is, what plan does the department have to ensure that institutions are able to generate their own income? The last one, Honorable Chair, provinces continue to understand on the conditional grant for the building of community libraries. This is not right, because many deep rural areas do not have libraries. And the question is, does the strategic plan and annual performance plan seek to address this challenge? If no, why not? If yes, in which way? Thanks very much, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Nakunyan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to kind of to add to that question. The issue of libraries. I don't know whether it is possible just to have libraries being managed centrally in the province, whether that has not been very problematic. Because I think libraries work better when they are managed at a local level. I'm just so because I've been in Bulawayo, where Bulawayo has its own library. It is an unfunded mandate, but it has four libraries, and they work very, very, very well. It funds the human resource, the material, and it has been running those libraries. It has even increased them because it built new libraries in other places and so on. And then it worked very well. But now, those libraries that are managed from the province, you find that most times people don't have real access to it. They have all the books, they have everything and so on, but people just don't have real access to it. The other thing, as I was looking at the slides here are not numbered, the one that talks about public entities. Public entities. I see in all the provinces except Limpo. While I was there, there was an attempt actually to make land available in Bulawayo to build something like a theater and so on, even applied and so on and so on. And then, but we never really had any support from the department. I wonder whether it is possible to revisit that, and because in the whole of Limpopo there we don't have any theater. And seems that there is no real support from the sector. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Civilian.
Chairperson, I only have four questions, and just for your information, Chairperson, I must leave this meeting around about half past three. That was the reason for my going up. Now, my first question is in connection with the selected indicators in the number of jobs created in the heritage sector. There's 7,500, and then the other one is in the support to arts and culture heritage, is 9,832. The information I'm looking at is that permanent jobs or is it temporary jobs?
That is the one. And then the other one, why you saying you want to maintain 10% vacancy rate? This is very, what do you call it,
strange.
It is very strange to me.
Ask me.
Yeah. I was asking you, but my colleague was first. He comes before you. It is strange that he's saying you want to maintain 10% and not try to lessen it. That is the reason for my question. Then the other one, the little African say, how far of you were? Okay, I'm from another table. Yeah. And then the other one is, do you get on a regular basis a report, an audit report from the public entities, how they spend their money and who's monitoring the situation from the department side? And then do you have any discussions in the Department of Arts and Culture in connection with the unfunded mandate on libraries? That answer I'm looking for it a very, very long time. Since we had a problem in local government 1994-1995. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable De Villiers. The provinces had a problem with the National Department of Arts and Culture and the other departments of parachuting programs into the provinces. I was once confronted by the people from the legislature saying that a department is coming in and the national department is coming in and they don't know a thing as the legislature. If it was like that with you, have you corrected us as a department? Because I think we have a culture in the province, in some provinces like mine, for within a minister of sports, MEC, where, yeah, like Western Cape, we've got ministers in Eastern Cape. MECs of sports and recreation, yeah, and the person who asked that question, who had the concern was from that department. We are almost in the middle of 2013. And this is in your slide of context of the presentation. You said you've got a program, or you are going to have program of this year to celebrate. Starting your celebration of the 20 years of freedom. I'm just wondering, you are preparing this year for 2014, or you have some of the programs that you are going to have this year or only in 2014? Cultural development, when you link your goals, I see that in program number 4, I'm also concerned we are delegates from different provinces, and I'm also concerned on the job creation strategic goal that you have. How many do you anticipate to have, or how many job creations do you want to anticipate in each province? Or when you talk job creation, you talk the in your department, as the national department, maybe and his bambanga up. The heritage site, we had started on Monday and Tuesday. There was a concern raised in my region. The talk about this minority in Eastern Cape, or that whenever the department is talking about heritage sites,
developing heritage sites or building whatever monuments, you're not saying anything about the Dele Bridge. And the Dele Bridge to us is very much important because it was a gateway for our comrades who were living in the country to during the apartheid system to other countries, using that phase of it. And we feel as we talk about it, that can help us in job creation as the land of as it talk about the region. And let me just raise this question. I'm raising this out of a very serious concern from the communities in that area. And I think I see from the attitude that I see now here from your officials that it was not of really a serious concern in your department. If you think you can give me a clear answer on that, or maybe Jim Founding, and I don't have it's not a serious matter that can be considered. You will tell me. Also, we National Archives and Library Services in your budget summary, the financial year, in 2012-2013, you budgeted 8 million or 8 billion for National Archives and Library Services. In 2013 and 2014, it went down, and then in the following years, that is 2014 and 2015, it rises again. And I'm not sure why this in 2013-2014, why did it go down? Because I think it should have gone at least for us to keep it, the momentum coming. It's for these things to happen and to be budgeted for, because at the end of the year if we can look at our budget and see if there is nothing that can constrain us on doing our program. My last one is I'm not sure whose responsibility it is when there's a natural disaster and one of your places or one of your monuments or one of your whatever a building that you have is affected by a disaster at that time, who is supposed to replace or to build it back or to help in rebuilding that strata? I'm asking this specifically because in Alwal North some time ago we had a library, a educator, and there was a storm and whatever, but it was destroyed. And that library was closer to the people, because the one that we have now is in town. And it means for Umdo Oshala Area 13, that library is very, very far. For a child from Ofunda Evumile, it's far in the township. For a child who's school there, that library is not accessible to that person, to that child. And we'll see. And we'll see. It's over.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. I will respond to some of them, and my colleagues will come in as well. The question about Izimbizos. We plan to spread Izimbizos across all provinces. Then the plan was to have two pieces of petrol so that we were able to reach all of the well as many places as we possibly can. The community dialogues, they are also spread across the provinces. But if you remember, the community dialogue is something that we started last year. So this is a continuation of it. They have been happening across all the provinces as well. I'll ask my colleagues to deal with the flag thing. Maybe let me deal with job creation. There are a number of questions around job creation. The jobs that we plan over a 5-year period, we plan to create 150,000 jobs. This year we have disaggregated it. We disaggregated it according to the different projects. We want to create about 9,000 jobs through the heritage program. There is about 7,000 jobs through arts and culture and so on and so forth. But the question that was asked is, where are we now with job creation? In the past financial year, we created 23,000 work opportunities through EDUCATE. Many of those were temporary jobs linked to specific events in specific places. But of that, now I'm beginning to answer a particular question. But of those jobs, okay, 102 jobs were created through public art. Legacy projects created 1,317 jobs, and they are spread out across the province. We can make that information available. But over the last year, we created 22,000 job opportunities through the various interventions in the golden economy. Some of those jobs are created during the construction phase. Some of our, Prison Park, the construction of CAR, created 400 jobs. The National Heritage Monument created 26 jobs. The Steve Biko Center of Memory created 363 jobs. The Matola Monument has created 160 jobs. So they are spread right across the provinces, and some of them are during construction, and more are during construction, and others are more sustainable over a long period of time during operations.
Just a follow-up question on that one. As you create these temporary jobs, do you have a program of skilling people in certain areas, also in those jobs?
Yes, sir. We have a program of skilling people. Look, some of the jobs, particularly construction jobs, they go with the skills development program so that the skills that people gain are able to utilize them, whether to create new businesses or to take them elsewhere. So yes, there is a skills development element that goes with it. There was a question about the community libraries. Oh, the lack of funding for museums. Ms. Ndima is going to add on this, but it's a problem. We acknowledge that it's a problem. We don't have sufficient funding for all our museums. Part of it is just the fact that we are trying to get more funding and able to, but a very big part of it is just the sheer numbers of museums that we've got, and they are growing. Now, if infrastructure is growing, whereas the budget is not growing, it does have a problem. Part of what we are busy with, Chair, is to consider how we can rationalize some of our museums. Do we need an institution, an entity for each of our museums, or we can cluster them, a number of museums under one? we've got precedence for that, that how Israel was created. The slave lodge was a museum on its own, the castle was a museum on its own, and so on and so forth. But when they were combined, they became Israel in the city of Cape Town. If you look at Bloemfontein, for instance, we've got a class of museums there. They're specialized in different areas. So we are looking at that kind of a model in order to reduce the operations cost for our museum. In fact, what's the cluster in Swan, in the Gauteng, the tone was created in the first as well. In fact, the tone, interestingly, some of them are not even in Swan, they are in Johannesburg. But it has become a provincial cluster of museums under one institution. What are we doing to encourage our museums to generate their own income? We are working with our museums to ensure that they generate income. However, I must state this, that sometimes there is a bit of a policy disjuncture. Our entities are entities, and they are listed in terms of the PFMA. Like all of us, at the end of the financial year, if there is money that is, if you've got a surplus, you've got to declare it and request permission to retain it. Now, Treasury may grant such permission or may decide against it. That is the big problem that we are facing. In fact, if you look at the institutions whose budget we look at this year, the AC, the NHC, Rapid Island, and the Playhouse Museum. Why did we cut them? Because their financials show that they've got money which is left over every year, so they are running surpluses, which works against the objective of making them sustainable. It's a problem, which we have to resolve with the Treasury. At the same time, we would like our institutions to generate their own income. The problem is that they've got to use it within the financial year, which does create a bit of a problem. Why do we have a 10% vacancy rate? I think the objective is to have at least 10% of the vacancy rate. You recall that we started 2 years ago, our vacancy rate was 41%. So now 10%, no, sorry. At the most, it's going to be 10%. So we want to reduce our vacancy rate to less than 10%. Ideally, we would like to have no vacancy rate. But the reality is that people resign, vacancies are created, but we'd like to keep it below 10%. There was an interesting question whether libraries should be managed centrally or should be managed by municipalities. It varies quite widely. The larger cities and the metros have managed libraries historically. So they've built capacities, they've built systems, and many of them are doing a decent job of it. If you look at the library grant in Gauteng as well as in the Western Cape, most of that money is transferred to municipalities because they have been managing the libraries themselves. But the reality is this. Libraries, in terms of the constitution, is a provincial function. So municipalities are saying, this is not our function. If you want to manage it, give us money for it. And that is why some of the library, the constitutional grant for libraries, goes to municipalities in order to incentivize them, continue to support it. In instances where municipalities have not managed libraries previously, the view that we have taken is that let's not overburden municipalities. Let's do it through provinces. The experience, in fact, I think it was at this committee some time ago, that we had a big debate about money that was allocated to municipalities, where they were reported that they built libraries. When we went there, we did not find the library. So the experience really varies quite widely. So what are we trying to do? We have set to provinces, let's continue working through municipalities where the system is working. Otherwise, for everywhere else, The building of new libraries should be done through the Revision Department. And that is how we are doing the work. Chair, there was a question around parachuting programs in provinces. I don't think that we have that problem. I certainly have not received those kinds of contents from provinces. We have a very functional MINMEC structure, which is supported by a technical team of HODs together with the senior staff of the department. So we plan our programs together, and when I do the next presentation, you will actually see how our planning system is integrated across the different spheres of government together with our institutions. So we haven't had a problem, certainly not that I'm aware of. The 30 years of freedom program, the plan was to start on the 27th of April this year, which is the year our freedom turned 90. We had a couple of hassles around that. So the plan for the 20 years of freedom is going to cabinet now. As soon as cabinet has approved it, then that's when we're going to start running it. We had planned that 1 year between April this year and April next year is going to be the year of mobilization. Then the year of celebration starts in April next year for another 12 months. Colleagues, let me ask other colleagues, Mr. Kikana, a couple of natural related questions that I don't want to do.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, DJ, and the Honorable Chair and members. There was a question from the Honorable Nguyen around the criteria that has been used in identifying areas for the new library facility. Primarily, the identification of new facilities is a role that is played by the MEC and in consultation, of course, with local government. Ideally, that is the way to go. Occasionally, the minister does identify, you know, the need for library facilities when he interacts with the public, like what has happened over the weekend, and then we begin to make follow-ups with the province concerned and with the local government in that particular area. But ideally, that is the role that is played by the NEC. There was also a question around how do we address the other expenditure. As DG indicated, we were in the Black Committee this morning for appropriations with three provinces that are under spending. Mm-hmm. And the commitment that has been made is that we have to look at beefing up capacity in those particular provinces. Mm-hmm. We need to have technical skills, the knowledge and the know-how of how to manage infrastructure projects, which has been absent. And in fact, some of the provinces have already taken a step further in terms of advertising positions for infrastructure. And we hope that the skills and the capacity that will be created will ensure that that they are able to spend the money that is given to them. The last one was on the issue of unfunded mandate. Indeed, we've had discussions and numerous discussions over the years around the issue of unfunded mandate. It is because of this particular issue that we have drafted the draft bill, South African Library Information Services Bill, that begins to define the relationship between the various spheres of government on how to coordinate and how to manage and operate this function. And that is primarily the reason why we've got that. But also, if you had looked at the allocations in the MTF, you would see that we are beginning to have increased allocations, and that allocation will be used to actually address this particular issue of unfunded mandate. In other words, we are going to look at how we can allow provinces to take full ownership, full responsibility of providing the function. In other words, they must take the full cost of running the function from the municipalities. Thank you very much, DJ.
Thank you very much, DG, Deputy Minister, Chairperson. I would confine myself to those issues that the DG did not cover.
which is the flex. The question was the number that has been stated in the presentation, whether it's something that has been done or it's something that still needs to be done. The answer there is the projection of what's going to be done this year, this financial year. And then the other question was, estimate how many schools are we talking about in this country. And the estimation that I have, you know, from colleagues is that we have got something about 25,000 schools. So it's an estimation. So that actually begins to say that there is still a lot of work to be done, yes. And of course, as a department, since this year, we've changed the way we have been dealing with the issue of flex. We have been centralizing it to appoint one service provider to do, you know, to install flex throughout the country. But that has its own challenges because people would then bid, and then they would discover, you know, along the way that, you know, schools, more particularly when it comes to the rural areas, it's not just an easy thing to go in all these areas and install the flex. So what we have done is we have tried to say per province, let's have the service provider per province. It's better than having one, you know, service provider to provide all these flags. But I think we also, you know, thinking that, you know, at some stage, it's going to be quite important that we engage our society to say it shouldn't only be government that provides these flags. For instance, some eminent members of the society might want to say, in my, you know, which school that would I want to go and donate the flag, for instance, the previous school that might have attended. So in that way, we then stigmatify this provision of the flag. But it's something that we say as government can start creating an enabling environment. But going forward also, I think that as a way of saying, we also can be patriotic enough to do that. And I think that by so doing, we'll be able to speed up the process. And then there was a question about I think the DC did cover this. I can only add that when it comes to the building of museums, monuments, and memorials, and interpretive centers, you're looking at a value chain of job creation where you're looking at people who work during the conceptualization, you know, research, conceptualization, the design of a museum or a monument, the actual construction. In the area of interpretive centers and museums, of course, there should be people who then operate those. Then those become permanent jobs that people can stay there for as long as they are still willing to work there. And then there was an issue around the Jodhpur matter that has been raised quite sharply by the chairperson. Maybe just to say, chairperson, the way I understood this particular matter is that it can easily lend itself, or it easily lends itself to the Liberation Heritage Unit, because it's about the history of the struggle for liberation. Now, what we have done, Chairperson, is that as part of the Liberation Heritage Unit, there's been provincial consultative processes that were led by the National Heritage Council, where each province was called upon to at least identify 3 pilot projects. I think that has happened in the 9 provinces. Now, the challenge could have been then, that maybe the province, there are limitations in terms of what they can do, because it's still at the level of the pilot project. So they would pilot those 3, and then once that pilot has happened, then there would then be a rollout in a much more bigger way in the province. So I'm just thinking that if, you know, this could then be considered in the future for inclusion as this particular project is being rolled out. I just thought that I would like to stop there. Thank you.
In response to the question about how far is the mobilization program working with organized arts communities, it's one of those strange scenarios where you really can drag the horse to water, but you can't really make them drink. So the sector needs to organize itself. Having said that, the department works extensively with organized structures. Visual Art Network in the Visual Art Sector, ECHO, which is the Organization of Independent Record Labels. And so in creating these partnerships, so these organizations are profiled in new ways, so they are seen to be working closely with government, and hopefully that in and of itself begins to create a desire amongst the community and to the knowledge of the work of these extraordinary organizations to continue to do this work. But this is like the craft sector, for example, still largely unorganized. But we do see organized structures in music, in film, in the performing arts, in the visual arts. And it's through the Lundy Golden Economy Project, the sourcing enterprise, where we start to put together a very large database of artists, that once again there will be additional resources available to these independent organizations, to the Creative Workers Union, CUSA, to really begin to work with this information and hopefully build their own structure. Thank you.
I've been reminded to deal with two questions. The one deals with the theatre and the book. it is true that we don't have a theatre and the book. In fact, of the nine provinces, we don't have a theatre in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, in the Eastern Cape, as well as the North Coast. We've got theatres in five provinces. In Northern Cape. Though in the Northern Cape we are helping to complete the theatre in Kimberley. We provide quite a bit of funding for that. And a museum. it's a problem that we still have to address. Museums, I think we've got museums in all provinces. Some of them are not necessarily managed by us. Like Mapungubwe is a World Heritage Site, but it is managed by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Although because it's a World Heritage Site, we work with them on the management thereof. We have plans, we are working with some of the provinces. Mpumalanga developed a plan to do a cultural precinct, so we are helping them to do that. And hopefully we'll jointly find that, as well as some of the other provinces. And certainly we will work with the Limpopo to develop that. The other question which Dr. Minister has asked me to deal with is the governance of our institutions. Yes, we do receive audited financial statements of all our institutions, but also we receive monthly financial reports as well as quarterly performance reports. We got a CEO structure between ourselves and our institution in order to deal with issues that need to be dealt with, and the minister and the deputy minister meet with the chairperson twice a year in order to address whatever issues they may need to address. Obviously, as and when there might be issues in institutions, we might meet with the board or the management to ensure that we address problems before they become crises.
There's a question on 8.4 in this book that I didn't.
Let's start with that one. We want to apologize upfront that this was in no way deliberate undermining of the NCOP. It's a matter which will be corrected. We want to assure the members that it was not a really sidelining, deliberate sidelining or undermining by any chance. So, our people who are dealing with communication and production of such material are aware of, you know, all our key stakeholders and that. That kind of a mistake does not happen again. So, deep apologies to the honourable member. Just to add to what the DG said about
Commissioner Quinion is concerned, which is my concern as well, because me and him must explain what are we doing here in Parliament when everybody else. The reality is that these are largely historical inheritances, where since 1994 you would know that, most of the playhouses, museums, which the department is currently supporting, were inherited. There are a few which, in over time, and there's acceleration now of a lot more over the last few years, of different sizes in terms of, as you would see in the report, we mentioned, for instance, there's the Tuli Museum, there are a number of others in that category, John Magalibarele Dube, some of those are still in the process of being constructed, Tirith Nkatolo in the Eastern Cape, Oliver Tambo Memorial, some of those are in the process. But largely, those which are already in the budget are those which were inherited. But going forward, the Chairperson and the Honourable Members, our intention is to make sure that we correct this imbalance. That's really our commitment. That is why, not only in museums and monuments, but in the promotion and access to various opportunities when national government participates in arts and culture, you would be also not covered here. For instance, as part of the Mzansi Golden Economy, we want to support also major cultural activities, carnivals, music festivals, and because these things do generate activities, do generate interest, exposure amongst our people, and if it's only catered just festival, Makube, for instance, you do have for instance, Limpopo Makube, it's nowhere comparable to Cape Town Jazz or Makufe or but I must also emphasize that while at the national level we are committed to that, honorable members would really help us to also make sure that they put some kind of agency and pressure in our different provinces, especially where some of these things are not really moving. Some of you may be aware that, for instance, a few years ago, quite early, around 95, 96, there was a program driven, there were two programs driven by both the National Sports Ministry and Arts and Culture, while it was still Culture and Science and Technology. On the sports side, supporting community sports facilities, including indoor sports centers, community arts centers. I was once an MSc for education and sports in Limpopo. There are places which we put up which became white elephants. Mm-hmm. Beautiful facilities which were put up in different parts of the province. Some of them which were supposed to be art centers, they only used in funerals, and occasional weddings. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the actual purpose for which they were put up, many of them, there was an audit, and it was quite embarrassing. So we would not want to venture whatever mega resources we have. So that's why, when there is an initiative, either at local municipality supported by province, then we are more confident that this will get support, because if the municipality and the province are also committing, there is a likelihood that they will make sure that it's supported, not only maintenance, but that there's a proper business plan which will ensure that facility actually works. Because otherwise, if we were to say, let's audit, there is no theater in Mpumalanga, let's go to Mbombela and put up a theater. Sometimes the MEC will say, yes, bring it. But then you finish it at the end, you find that they expect the national department to come back and actually make sure that it is functioning. So that's what I should just mention in terms of making sure that to confirm that from the National Department, we are committed to equity, but we also are very conscious that that works better if also there is a local initiative which brings about some of these things. I think the same thing as Mr. Bima did mention about the project that you mentioned in your region, in the Jordan region, and even when the Liberation Heritage sites, essentially we do understand that there are some of those which from a national level where there is quite a lot of prominence in terms of our equity and our redress of the past, bringing Liberation Heritage on the platform, where some of this have been identified either through, for instance, the centenary of the ANC, and some of this became prominent, and we are working together with the provinces, identify those and put some resources. But there's a very clear understanding that there will be different hierarchies. Some of, even in the Liberation Heritage, local municipalities will identify sites because of local history, some at a provincial history level, and then we'll collaborate and see how much, you know, so we'd encourage that that be done. I think I'll leave it there, John. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, we are expecting the second presentation now. And we are not going to go on break of 5 or 10 minutes, smoking break. We will continue. Over to you.
Thank you very much once again. The presentation I'm going to deal with is going to deal with, of course, a bit of background. Background strategic planning with the government, some of the challenges that we've got at JC and our sector, how we deal with these challenges, what the strategic linkages are, what some of the operational linkages are, how the key stakeholders are, who they are firstly, and how we involve them in our planning, and finally how we roll out the strategic planning process. The government adopted the outcome approach, which ensures the process shift from being output focused to being outcome oriented. And this, 2 years ago, the AG, the Auditor General, started with the auditing of predetermined objectives. Even though it does not express an opinion on it, the AG started looking at whether we've got predetermined objectives that comply with Treasury guidelines. And therefore it's important that all our measures combine with SMART principles, and those are central to planning. And we have had instances of Parliament rejecting strategic plans and APPs which are of mediocre quality. And an important point to make is that if our plans are credible, implementation becomes simpler. If we cut corners at a plan stage, in fact this morning at the Appropriations Committee we had quite a lot of those examples where now that it's the financial year has ended, we are reporting, people say, well, the plan was the problem. It's not the implementation that is the problem. If our plans are not properly well thought out, implementation becomes complicated. And, of course, we are beginning a new electoral cycle. We've got to do a revised medium-term strategic framework as well as a whole new program of action. Departments develop 5-year strategic plan which are aligned with the medium-term strategic framework as well as a program of action. These are based I mean, the plans of each, which each department prepares, which then are linked to the APP, which is an implementation plan, a budget, which has to be submitted to Treasury and as well and to Parliament. In parallel to these things, in-year monitoring and reporting, as well as budget processes. This shows that planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting are processes that influence one another and they should talk to each other. And in analyzing the planning environment, we found this for these challenges. Uncoordinated planning within the sector. Provinces go one way, entities go another, the department goes another way, and they need to properly coordinate this. I must say, Chair, that I don't think that uncoordinated planning happens because people don't cooperate. Just that we haven't had a proper system of cooperation. There's a lack of proactive management of strategic planning and take it as an event rather than a process. Strategic planning, if you look at it, strategic planning is a year-long process. It fits into our reporting cycle. It fits to the budgeting cycle. So it's important that we develop a system that acknowledges the cyclical nature of planning. There's been an issue where people deal with strategic planning as a compliance issue, where people just plan for the sake of planning without necessarily going through the rigorous process of establishing our objectives. There's been a wide program of lack of impact measures for the sector. There's been manifestations of poor planning, which include that plans are difficult to implement, which results in over underspending and non-achievement of some predetermined objectives. And there's always the temptation of revising indicators and targets mid-year. You know, sometimes we start to say we will create so many jobs. When it's becoming clear that this is not achievable, we want to change the target mid-year, which is a problem. And National Treasury does not allow this unless it is done through the proper adjustment process. Now, how do we deal with these kinds of challenges? One is we are introducing a sector-wide strategic planning guide, which promotes greater planning that ensures that there's an alignment within the sector. It includes ourselves as a national department, our institutions, as well as the provincial departments of sports, arts, and culture. It takes into consideration the genuine interest of stakeholders, and we'll show how that is done. It also creates the sector key performance indicators for outcomes measurement. You cannot have a system where we implement our programs through our entities, but the indicators, our indicators don't speak to the entity's indicators. That's what we want to correct. The strategic planning process is informed by analysis of previous performance, and that's through the annual report, the AG's audit outcome, as well as other evaluation reports. We also want to include into the planning process of the department and the sector, contributions from Parliament, both the portfolio as well as the theory, as well as the select committee, cabinet, as well as the budget and whole. Thank you. But also we don't want planning to just be senior management. We want to draw in middle managers into our planning process because it's important from an ownership as well as relevance point of view. The strategic linkages, we want to do integrated planning that will be informed and draws from the framework for strategic planning and annual performance plans, which is a treasury thing, the treasury regulations, as well as public service regulations, the national development plan, and other documents that pronounce on the government-wide strategic planning approach. We assume that after next year's election, there is going to be a revision of the outcomes, and that implies that that is going to influence our planning. And obviously, the government-wide MNE that has an effect, the outcome-based performance management approach, the budgeting and resource allocation policies, as well as inputs from stakeholders and trusted bodies. So, operationally, winning strategic planning is a continuous process that requires constant feedback on how current strategies are working and performance measures, and measurement and reporting, which provide constant feedback. Essentially, we are saying that planning is a cyclical thing. You cannot exclude that from reporting, because as we report, if certain of our targets are not met in the first quarter, it has an impact on what we do in the second quarter, and so on and so forth. So that is what we want to link strategic planning with performance management and reporting. Strategic planning looks ahead towards desired goals, performance measures, and reporting looks back at achievements. We need to have efficient central repository to house program performance information, evaluation reports, policy review reports, as well as other socio-economic intelligence and data. The Auditor General expresses an opinion on the quality of our objectives, performance indicators, as well as other targets, which are published in the strategic plan and APP. It's important that we take this into consideration. In fact, at the beginning of this year, the Auditor General did an interim audit of our annual performance plan. The annual performance plan which we've just presented went through an audit process with the AG to ensure that it meets with it complies with the principles of smart planning. Obviously, it's important that our planning, our strategic planning, is linked to a budget process. And normally there's a problem if strategic planning is not strategically linked to one budgeting. And this happens in two ways. One is that we plan one thing, we submit to Treasury, Treasury gives us a budget, and we don't review our plan. And when you find during the course of the year, ask Treasury for 5 billion rands, you got 2 billion rands. But if it is not reviewed our plan, then you will not be able to meet your target. And we all know that we get our allocation letter in November. So we've got ample of time between November and February when we submit our strategic plans to Parliament to actually review our target in line with our allocation letter. Our strategic and annual performance plans are central to individual performance management. It's important that we link those, both from the creation of our performance contract, as well as evaluation, as well as the management thereof. We also incorporate risk management into our strategic planning, so that as we manage our performance, we manage risks as well. It's important that we do that. We identify strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats, and that's crucial to our strategic planning process. The report of our institutions. National Treasury stipulates that departments responsible for institutions must exercise oversight of planning, budgeting, and reporting of those institutions. Critical that we've got 28 institutions, but those institutions have only one executive authority. If something goes wrong, Treasury does not ask the CEOs, they ask the executive authority. And it's important that we exercise this kind of oversight. And it's important that there should be an alignment in our strategic planning session, and therefore our entities need to be involved in the process. Provincial departments of arts and culture, once again, we're involved in executing similar political and legal mandates, and therefore it's important that we blend together with our provincial counterparts. The political authority, the minister, the deputy minister, they give political direction, and they provide them the line of march, which is what guides our strategic plan. Recall that our strategic plans are based on the manifesto of the ruling party, and that's where the delivery agreement of the minister comes from. And we have made provision in our strategic planning process for the minister to address and give the political context and direction to what we need to do. It's an ideal time for senior management to understand what the minister and the deputy minister want to achieve, and therefore what the marching orders for the department are. Parliamentary committees, not just a portfolio, but parliamentary committees, we want to provide an opportunity for parliamentary committee to be involved in our planning process. There have been many cases where that has been expressed explicitly. And I think it's important that given the role of the parliamentary committees, we should consciously and purposefully contribute towards the building process of the department. It also helps from a performance reporting point of view, because if parliamentary committees are involved in the planning process, when we come and report, they are familiar with the issues that we are dealing with. And I think that's quite important. It is also important when we have debates about strategic plans, we would like to say that, but the committee was also involved in the development of the plan. So it's getting by it. Of course, we've got to involve directly and indirectly other industry players, both consumers as well as producers of agriculture products. Will always have a contribution to make in the way that our programs assist them. It's important to structure these in a meaningful way, in a meaningful manner. Now, how do we roll out the process? Our process starts now in May through a political address by the minister and the deputy minister, which really provides a scene setting for planning. That is followed by the discussions with top management of the department, which is then followed by the engagement with public entities. The CEO's forum meets after that in order to begin to start the process of planning. And that is followed by the discussions that we have with our provincial departments in such a meeting at the end of June with our provincial departments. And then the process goes to the different units. The DGs engage that with their sectors. Then we've got the briefing of the parliamentary committee. And then we've got the strategic planning forum on the 4th week of May. The strategic forum is an internal structure, which is followed in June by the DEC strategic retreat, which includes all our management together with the middle manager, the CEO of our institutions, the representative of provincial government, as well as the parliamentary committees. Then in the second quarter, the different public entities undertake their own retreats, as at the same time the different branches of DC also do their own planning. We then reprioritize our inputs and towards the consolidation of the database. The first week of August, we've got the first draft of the department's ADP. The public entities finalize their draft, which is then signed off by the DG in the second week of August. In the fourth week of August, we make our first submission of the draft APB to the Treasury as well as the Presidency. The public entities also, in fact, it was supposed to be first that they submit to the DAC and we submit that to as a consolidated draft to the APB, of the APB to Treasury and the Presidency. The strategic planning forum happens on the fourth week of November. Why fourth week of November? Because at that time we would have received our allocation letter. So we are cutting our address to fit our cloth. We will be making the reprioritization of our plans in line with the resources that are available. We continue in October and November to engage with branches to polish up the APP. And then in October is the medium-term budget policy statement, which is important because that is when any potential rollovers are approved, which recommends, which determines the budget that we have for the rest of the financial year, but also gives guidance towards the budget for the following year. In November, we finalized the second draft of the APP together with the entities. And once we've got the letter allocation, then we finalized the chapter of the ENE, or the Estimates of National Expenditure, which is followed by the Strategic Planning Forum, which is an internal internal process. In January, there's the general statement, the Cabinet Lekgotla, which then gives a bit of political context to the thing that we need to do. In January, again, entities submit their APP to the DAC. We do the final session of strategic planning at the end of January, beginning of February. We edit the plan, and we are ready to submit that after the State of the Nation and the budget speech. That's where we submit our strategic plan and APP, which then gets tabled in Parliament at the end of February. That is what we thought is important to introduce to the committee. It really, all we're trying to do is to integrate the different stakeholders that we work with, both the political oversight within the department, within Parliament, as well as our delivery partners within provinces, entities, as well as stakeholders. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you,
Kim.
It is this time of the day, it is. And then I was fresh to ask some few questions from you. It won't take a lot of your time, sir, DC. I will now give over, if there is no one from the department that will add on what Uti said. Deputy Minister, I'm not closing doors for you. Okay, fine. Then, members, do you have anything to question? If there is none, I don't think that the DC will feel embarrassed that he is not asked, you know. He will actually feel very happy. Honorable Nube.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the DC for involving us, even if it is the last year, we'll be present.
This is a strategic plan. It's a process within the Department of Arts and Culture and the other sectors that are surrounding the department, which I think, because it's a process, we will just have to monitor that if the process is really going on the right way, are you really involving the people that you need to involve? As much as you've met in a lot of departments from and your entities and everybody in this process, we will also monitor if we, as the select committee that are directly elected from the provinces and delegated to this parliament, to the NCOP, are we involved, or is it only the PC, which is the parliamentary committees, by the way, now? As much as your planning process, DG, it looks beautiful. It's really involving all the stakeholders. But I think the most important thing that needs for us to evaluate and monitor is this planning fails on the planning process. Is the other departments and the other sectors really feeling it, or is it only around the department alone? If there are no further questions, as I've been given this power for these 3 hours, the chairperson is here now, and I will give over to her to round up the day, because chairperson,
not only get an appointment, especially going to pay me for this.
Ex-chairperson, you close the meeting. I just wanted to say just one thing to the DG that I'm happy that I'm not the one who exposed him. He's the one who exposed himself to the meeting with so that the presentation, you know. Now, I think in future. Because from the onset, I said I'm not going to expose him. But you expose yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, let me thank your
You don't even mention that we plead guilty.
Okay, I thought you pleaded guilty in all. I was going to say that to the Chairperson. Chairperson, they did agree on the mistake. I don't know if it was a mistake or a misprint that has been done by the printers, but the department has accepted its fault on. All right, department, Mamele Mos, Kamlandi, DM, you are here. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department on giving us these two presentations today in the afternoon. You know, when you work in the afternoon, you sometimes work so reluctantly, you don't want to do the job, but you've done it very well. And also, it's been a long time. The select committee, I think there is a sense of missing this department within the select committee. Yeah, thank you for coming to the committee. Usually we don't experience the sense of having the minister with us. But let me thank you for coming to the select committee. Select committee is one of the committees of parliament. It's constitutional, like the PC. To the officials of the department, thank you very much. To the members and the officials around Parliament, and the officials here in Parliament with us who are not coming from Pretoria, who are here with us, I want to thank them also to be with us this afternoon. And I thank me for conducting this meeting. Because I know no one will thank me. I must thank myself. Thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is over.
We just need a photocopy. Let's get Ghana to give you a
photocopy.
Okay, thanks.